Hello, friends. We are beginning our work with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 65. And we have been working in the sign Aquarius. We reached the point where we were discussing the decanates of Aquarius. And there is much complexity here. We have been discussing particularly the Tibetans' view of Aquarius, which gives us Saturn ruling the first decanate from 0 to 10, Mercury from 10 to 20, and Venus from 20 to 30. And then it is also possible, he tells us, or will tell us, to reverse these decanates for the individual who is on the clockwise wheel of form. In which case, Venus, still associated with 20 to 30, would be the first decanate, because entry into the series of decanates would be done in reverse according to a clockwise manner. So Venus would be the first decanate, Mercury again the second, and Saturn the third. Then he told us about Sephariel's, well, pretty well, I guess, with Alan Leo, we have the same choice as the Tibetans. But with Sephariel, we have Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. This is pretty much the same as the clockwise decanate, and DK explains how the Moon is the substitute here for Saturn and is really veiling Uranus. Now, the thing that I tried to point out with both Sephariel and Alan Leo, they did not conceive of the decanates as moving as in a reverse order for the ordinary non-aspiring individual. They simply took the rulerships from 0 to 10, then 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. So in the case of Sephariel, for him, Venus is ruling 0 to 10, Mercury 10 to 20 again, and the Moon, which DK says is veiling Uranus, then 20 to 30. However, it seems that we must also consider Sephariel's decanates as operating in the reverse manner, in which case Venus would be associated with 20 to 30, the Moon with 20 to 30, and Venus with 0 to 10. Now, we could reverse this by imagining that we could enter the position with the position of the Moon at 20 to 30, and it would be the first decanate, and Venus would be the last. In any case, we see here an image, and this image shows us that the outer wheel is the wheel of consciousness, and we have Saturn, Mercury, and Venus, and the inner wheel is the wheel of form, and we will go here with what the Tibetan says. The first decanate will be Venus, the second Mercury, and the third will be the Saturn decanate, but really the Moon, Uranus, from another perspective. So when astrologers take the liberty, let us say, of reversing Sephariel's decanates, they are not doing as he himself intended to do. They may be correct about that. Venus may, in fact, be associated with 20 to 30 and may indicate entry into the decanates by the undeveloped or average individual. And the Moon may indicate 0 to 10. That may be true, but it is not the way Sephariel intended it to be. When we come here to the extra zodiacal constellations, which are to be associated with the decanates. Though remember, every Aquarian will be associated with Cygnus the swan, Pegasus the winged horse, and Pisces Austrinus or Australis, the great fish, the fish avatar. We can assign Cygnus to the first decanate, indicating the soul, Pegasus the winged horse or aspiring soul, and Piscis Austrinus or Pisces Australis, depending, it can be called either way, as the fish avatar associated with Venus. But it also seems possible the order of these constellations is sometimes given with Pisces Australis first and Cygnus last. We can certainly associate Cygnus with Venus and Pisces Australis with the sacrificial sacrifice of the avatar under Saturn. In any case, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus are the planets in correct order for ruling the decanates for the disciple in counterclockwise order. Let's go back just a little bit here and see what DK has said. Yes, we've elaborated quite a bit on the idea that Saturn rules the first. He stands aside and gives place to the illumination of Mercury, who then stands aside and gives place to the brotherhood of Venus. So these are the gifts of Shambhala, we are told, if man will but prepare to receive them. Opportunity under Saturn, illumination under Mercury, and brotherhood under Venus. Then he deals a little bit with Sepharial's decanates. The three decanates, according to other astrologers, are governed by Venus, Mercury, and the Moon. We can see that is Sepharial. You can see here the relation of astrology to normal or the reversed wheel. The Moon, which here takes the place of Saturn, hides the planet Uranus. And then he says a very interesting thing. Obviously, he's intending that these Sepharial decanates be considered in the order reversed from the way Sepharial had conceived them. He's thinking then that one enters 30 to 20 via Venus and ends 10 to 0 via the Moon. So the Moon here takes the place of Saturn and hides the planet Uranus. I think we can see that here, that the Moon, here is Saturn in the reverse order of the decanates, as DK will himself suggest that we should follow the decanates he's given, the decanate rulers, Saturn, Mercury, Venus, in reversed order for the average man. And if we take Sepharial's decanates then in the reverse order, as if entering from the later part of the sign and moving towards the earlier part of the sign, then the Moon will substitute for Saturn. And the Moon will veil Uranus, and DK explains this in a very interesting way. The Moon, which here takes the place of Saturn, hides the planet Uranus. In this case, Uranus, the occult planet, stands for exoteric science. So the very highest expression of Uranus is not here found, but certainly a strongly mental expression. Stands for exoteric science, which penetrates into the hidden side of form life. So the scientific bent of Aquarius is here explained in terms of planetary rulers. Uranus rules the penetration into the hidden side of form life, which is represented by the Moon. And thus we have the period when people are subject to these planets, particularly wherein the man is not alert enough or conscious enough to seize upon opportunity, which would be Saturn, and turn it to esoteric or soul ends. But he can identify himself with more advanced aspects of form. He can study the garment of God. He can use the fifth ray to understand how the form works, even though he cannot penetrate into the level of the soul. The energy which produces opportunity, illumination, and brotherly love, as expressed and attained upon the fixed cross, demonstrates upon the mutable cross as difficulty, now that is Saturn, the versatile and volatile mind, which is Mercury, and as sex, which is Venus. Now here he's moving in the order that is contrary to the order on the clockwise wheel. Excuse me. The clockwise wheel gives us Venus, Mercury, and Saturn, but he has begun to describe these, and one wonders why he began with the, with what turns out for the average person to be the last decanate. Why did he begin there and talk about difficulty, and then the volatile and unstable mind in Mercury, and then a sex in Aquarius? And we do see that strongly emphasized among many people today, as we are entering Aquarius for many people through the portal of Venus. Now we will go on and see what else can be said here. This appears clearly in the words spoken to the man upon the mutable cross as he passes through an Aquarian cycle. The words are, "And the word said, let desire in form be ruler." It's almost as if the soul is speaking to the ignorant personality, which cannot help but act the way it must because it is not yet sufficiently illumined. So there is a widespread desire for a great variety of things which constant mutation presents to the consciousness. This appears clearly in the words spoken to man. In other words, I suppose he's talking about how the Aquarian decanates express upon the mutable cross. Difficulty, Saturn, the versatile and volatile mind, unstable and dark, and as sex. These we will see well represented during the Aquarian age by average humanity. It's a lot different from opportunity, illumination, and brotherly love. Okay, and the word said, let desire in form be ruler, for desire becomes gained knowledge, and the knowledge of that which is hidden at any stage upon the path of evolution relates to the individual, relates the individual to Uranus. So this is the progression from desire to knowledge to that which is hidden, or occult knowledge, moving towards the occult knowledge of Uranus. It's almost as if we could say that the moon, well, it could be Venus or the moon, moves towards Mercury, which is knowledge, and then towards Uranus as knowledge of hidden things. When the man is, you see how the Tibetan is turning the wheel this way and that way. He's not allowing us to enter from only one perspective. He is demanding that we be able to conceive of the wheel in the clockwise manner and in the counter and in the counterclockwise manner. So we have to be very alert as to the perspective he's using. When the man is upon the fixed cross, the words come forth, water of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men. Well, the spiritual and soul energies are poured forth through those two wavy lines, and they are given to all, to whomever can possibly use them. This is very much like the work of the hierarchy, which is pouring forth blessing upon all humanity. The question is whether the human beings can assimilate it or not. We do realize that Aquarius is particularly the sign of the spiritual hierarchy of the planet, and its vast beneficence to the human race and to the planet as a whole. DK says, the implications are so clear that there is no need for me to be more explicit or to elaborate the theme. He's going on here a bit, and let's see if he has more to say about the decanates. I think that he's not going to speak so much more about the decanates at this point. So perhaps this would be the... He is going to speak about important things, but leading up to Capricorn. So I think I will say a little bit about the decanates, looking at them from the perspective of their application at six different stages of evolution. Yes, there's a lot more to be said here, obviously, in this Aquarius chapter, but I think we need here to study the decanates in their particular application at different phases of human evolution. So now, entering the decanates in relation to at least three phases of evolution. Okay, and in order for this to happen, we will look at this sixfold chart. Okay. Okay, then we will continue, and here we have the sixfold development. Now, what we can see here is that there is progress on the wheel of form. We are entering the decanate from the 30 to 20 position. It's the last decanate, but the first for the individual on the wheel of form. And we move from Venus through Mercury, WOF means wheel of form, and through Saturn. Now, I say here, in line with what the Tibetan said, borrowing his point of view, consider as well the moon, which is hiding Uranus, and DK did explain that. This moves towards the development of the personality, which is here indicated as a green star. But then for the disciple, we begin with Saturn from the 0 to 10 decanate. From 10 to 20, we move through Mercury. This is the reversing wheel, going in the counterclockwise direction. And finally, we end up with the climax in Venus. Whether we consider the fish to be the associated with Venus, or whether we consider Cygnus the Swan. In some ways, the beautiful Cygnus the Swan makes a lot of sense to associate directly with Venus, and the sacrifice of the great fish could be associated with sacrificial Saturn. Here are depicted Alan Leo's decanates, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus, and Sapphariel's decanates. But notice here, the Sapphariel decanates show Venus in relation to 0 to 10, Mercury in the normal place, and the Moon in relation to 20 to 30. So we have turned Sapphariel's decanates around, really. We are not entering Aquarius via the Moon for the average individual. I suppose, in a way, we could. You know, I suppose that the moon could indicate the kind of response to the instinctual nature which the man undergoes. Though how to explain Venus in the third decanate for the average man, that would be perhaps more difficult. Venus is certainly not brotherly love at that point, but a kind of general attraction to things, the sex impulse. I think it's best to stick with what DK has given us, Venus, Mercury, and Saturn, though for the average man, Moon veiling Uranus. Now, in general, we would have to say that the average man is going to come under the rulership of the planet Uranus. This is kind of interesting because Uranus is considered to be one of the sacred and synthesizing planets. But let's say that there are six stages to deal with when dealing with any human being. The physical Lemurian stage, astral Atlantean stage, and also the mental stage, which is the Aryan stage. It is here that it is important, I think, to think of Saturn as the ruler of Aquarius, because we can see that for the early stages of Aquarius, the Saturn rulership might make more sense than the Uranian rulership. When a person enters this mental phase of development, then it would seem that the Uranus rulership would be important. Otherwise, we have, in general, the limitations of the sign Aquarius. Now, when we move on to the reverse wheel, we have the personality aspiring. It's the higher personal self, and it's aspiring towards a higher state of consciousness. Uranus is still important here, because the individual is attempting to break loose strictly from the personality level. We can say that Jupiter is, as the esoteric ruler, is coming in. Then we have the disciple stage, where the person is increasingly soul conscious, and this is definitely taken under the esoteric rulership of Jupiter. And finally, when we move to the sixth stage, the hierarchical initiate stage, we have the planets veiled by the moon, and they are Vulcan, Neptune, and Uranus. All three are veiled by the moon, and we are going to have then the transfiguration of the personality. And so that is a very high stage where all the three planets give their gifts to elevate the personality into a high stage where it can serve completely as the instrument of the transfigured consciousness. The elevation of the personality and the transfiguration of consciousness and the corresponding vibratory state within the personality, which allows that transfigured consciousness to express in the three lower worlds. So what I've just done here is I've looked at the rulerships of Aquarius in relation to the six stages. The six stages, Lemurian, Atlantean, Aryan, and then the stage of aspiring Aryan personality, then the stage of discipleship, then the stage of initiation, or the initiate. Now, that's not strictly the way to look at this in terms of the decanates, but at least it is a foundation. Now, when we consider page 333, here, let's see, page 333 of Esoteric Astrology. Whoops, I didn't do that correctly. Here it is, 333 of Esoteric Astrology. We see that we're dealing with the undeveloped man, the advanced man, and the disciple initiate. That's not exactly the same categories I've used, but in Aquarius, we also have to deal with these mantras of all things to all men and the burden of the self, that's the relatively undeveloped man, the average man. Then we have dedication to the soul and the burden of humanity. That sounds rather disciplic. We could say that it relates to the advanced man, but I think not entirely. I think you have to be somewhat of a disciple to have the dedication to the soul and to be willing to carry the burden of humanity. Then finally, the server of all men and carrying the burden of the world. That's definitely initiatic. So in this case, average man, I think, definitely has the burden of the self. So the first two stages that I've been discussing, the Lemurian and Atlantean, definitely carries the burden of the self. And so does the mental, early personal stage carry the burden of the self and begins to seek through the awakening mind to become all things to all men. When we enter the stage of aspiration, the higher personal expression aspiring towards the soul, it's really the stage of the aspirant, then we can have dedication to the soul. And that intensifies in the disciplic stage. Dedication to the soul carrying the burden of humanity. And as the disciple stage gives way to the initiatic stage or hierarchical stage, we do have the server of all men and the strength developed in Scorpio previously and in Capricorn to help to carry the burden of the world. So there is the release of the Christ energy here. Virgo has been carrying this Christ energy, and Aquarius releases Virgo, and we have the very full expression of the Christ energy in service. Okay, so now we will look at the decanates, but rather than speak of the decanates for the Lemurian, Atlantean, and even early Aryan man, which is here, and you know, which you can study. I suppose if I go down this very slowly, you would be able to stop the image at any point, and you would be able to study what is here. So for the Lemurian man, these are the things. He's working under the burden of the self, and we have the Saturn-Uranus influence in a very orthodox way. I'm not really going to describe this right now because I think it deviates rather far from DK's book. But I'll go slowly here, so you can freeze the screen at any time if you want to study this more carefully. We move into the Atlantean stage, still basically under the rulers, Saturn and Uranus, under the Orthodox ruler. And the early, let's see what we've got here. Yeah. Okay, here we are. The early phases, the idea of let desire and form be ruler, still carrying the burden of the self, and not yet capable of reorienting towards the soul. The pursuit of diversified gratification, subjects to moods and vicissitudes, lots of ups and downs. I'm not going to really go into this in great detail. Okay, and finally we reach the stage of the mental or lower personal stage. The personality begins to integrate around the mental unit, and in order to become a selfishly integrated personality, you have to have some mental focus, and that is especially so in the mental sign Aquarius. We're still under the earlier general mantram, let desire and form be ruler, the burden of the self is being carried, and especially all the illusions of the mental nature. The observant mind is coming into play. And now, under Uranus, we can begin to be a little bit interested in the subtler aspects of form. The possibility of taming the restless mind is here, under the concentrative influence of Saturn. And the influence of the fifth ray can come in. Aquarius is a very fifth ray sign. In the stage of strictly mental focus, that fifth ray can begin to sharpen up. The person can become scientifically interested, interested in the form, but not yet capable of entering the soul influence. So there is the acquisition of knowledge, and the man perhaps begins to think in ways that are not strictly traditional as he comes under the influence of Uranus. Okay, so you can study those as you wish, but now we will deal with the three phases which do have the most to do with our life as students of esotericism. And these phases would be particularly the aspirational, higher personal, and integrating stage. Now, the individual is still under the discipline of Saturn and Uranus, because the individual is not yet soul-infused to any significant extent, but he has reoriented towards the soul, and is interested in the higher of the pairs of opposites. The exoteric rulers are still operative, but the esoteric ruler of Jupiter is perhaps being faintly felt. The individual is not yet entirely upon the fixed cross, but is making that transition, is aspiring towards crucifixion upon the fixed cross. And what I've said here is that at first, when the selfishly integrated personality, the burden of the self, especially the lower ego as a whole, he is all things to all men, and initially desire in form is the ruler. This is in the normal personal stage. Later, in this stage of the aspirant, the man catches the vision of the soul and is able to enter into what was described on page 333 as dedication to the soul. And the urge to serve begins to develop, because the aspirant does begin to care about others. He begins to meet the needs of his fellow human beings, not only those in his immediate group. Remember, we discussed how the average Aquarian would confine all of his interests in the immediate group. Let us say it would be a business group or some other kind of group which would capture his full dedication. The factor of creativity enters because Uranus is beginning to be important. Now we can really look at Uranus as the orthodox ruler releasing some of its potentials. The factor of creativity enters. Novel approaches to the process of living are attempted. New combinations are sought. This is the aspiring personality using the orthodox ruler or exoteric ruler Uranus in a higher, in a way that is higher strictly than just for mental scientific pursuit. Jupiter is impending, and which is the esoteric ruler, and life's expansive possibilities begin to be realized. Okay. Now that's generally under the rulership of the phase of the aspiring personality. Remember that phase number three, this is phase number four, the aspiring personality. Phase number three is different. It is the integrating personality, integrating around the mind, and it is not yet aspiring in any sense. Not aspiring. It's quite happy to be the personality. All right, now we are... Okay, it doesn't... It's not so easy to manipulate this, but here we are. Now we are going to talk about the Saturn phase, the Mercury phase, and the Venus phase in relation to the aspiring personality. So when we're coming under the... Let's say that we are in this general phase. We are aspirants. We're in the fourth phase. We are aspirants. And we're born in the 0 to 10 decanate. We're under Saturn because the wheel is reversing now. We're not under the moon Uranus, and we're not strictly under the difficulty of Saturn. Something new is happening. And what do I say this is? The man undertakes group responsibility. You know, because Aquarius is the sign of the group, Saturn is the planet of responsibility. He does this initially for his own benefit, and later for the welfare of the group. He is carrying the burden of the groups with which he may be involved. He learns to carry burdens for the group. He comes under the discipline, Saturn, of the soul. Because he's on the reversing wheel, he tends to choose, because Saturn is the planet of choice, spiritual values. He takes the painful steps, Saturn as a planet of pain, which will allow him to mount the fixed cross under Cygnus. Well, let's just say we can choose Cygnus if we want, because Cygnus is the great symbol of the liberated soul. We're not in the position yet of the liberated soul. We could also look at Pisces Australis, the large fish, and the way that that fish drinks from the river, drinks from that which Aquarius pours forth. That fish is absorbing these waters, and that fish is also sacrificing. So some initial sacrifices are made here, as the aspirant begins to realize that he lives not only unto himself alone. Remember, though, that he is not yet a fully committed and consistent disciple. We are in the fourth stage of aspiration, a higher personal stage, and we are integrating and beginning to come under the influence of the soul. Now, if we are born when we are in this stage of consciousness, in the second decanate, we are under Mercury. The man expands his mind, relating many things, either selfishly at first, because much aspiration is, of course, initially selfish, or unselfishly later. He becomes an independent thinker. Yes, because Uranus always gives independent thought, and we are still in the Uranian, the general phase of Uranus, because Uranus is the exoteric ruler, and even when we are an aspiring personality, we are not yet strictly in the soul phase, where the ruler is Jupiter. So he becomes an independent thinker, and we have under Pegasus the aspiration towards greater things. Pegasus is the symbol of rising upward towards the heights. Maybe I'll say a little bit more about that, looking at some of the descriptions of Pegasus from the Wikipedia. I don't want to get too profoundly into the mythology, because that could be a book all by itself. But the idea that the personality is the horse, and Pegasus has wings, it certainly is the symbol of that which is usually of the earth, rising far above itself and into the heavens. So we have the aspirational mind here under Mercury. Interestingly, this is the Gemini decanate of Aquarius, just the way the 0 to 10 is the Aquarius decanate of Aquarius. The next will be the Libra decanate of Aquarius, the third, and it's coming under Venus. Now, we don't have full brotherly love yet, because we're only in the fourth stage of being the aspiring personality, the aspirant. So in this third decanate, in the personality phase, the man becomes magnetic. He absorbs under Piscis Austrinus, for his benefit, the riches, the energies of the world. Well, that is a somewhat selfish condition of the aspirant, but there is the absorption of these energies, and they can be used. Later, he becomes imbued with these energies for the benefit of others, and he begins to sense the soul in his group relations. And let's maybe say a little bit more about this. He expresses Venus. Let's see, I'm going to change the... Well, I think I'll change the color here and operate in green. I think that would be the way to go. Yeah, okay. He expresses Venus, incipient, brotherly love. And his human relations improve, and he begins to treat others with kindness, respect, love. He's operating, let's just say, right human relations are developed by this aspirant. Okay, so this is a phase which many of us have been in when strictly aspirants, when still quite focused in the personality, when aspiring towards the soul, but not yet having taken the first initiation, not yet true and steady disciples. But if we move on to phase number 5, which is that which I think concerns us the most, most of us, there I've said many things here, but you can freeze the screen at any point, but it gets a little bit too technical here. I just want to hit the high points. We are now in stage number 5, and first we will describe that stage in general as being the disciplic stage, when we're on the fixed cross and soul cultivation is the main factor. Under the influence of Jupiter now, because Jupiter is in general the esoteric ruler of Aquarius, though there may be the anticipation of the hierarchical ruler, the triply veiling moon, as discipleship moves towards initiation. But we are in the general phase when we can begin to respond to water of life am I poured forth for thirsty men. That water of life, a mantram, will also have some application to the previous stage 4, we will begin to realize, especially under Venus in the last decanate, and maybe under Mercury, that we have certain gifts, and that we can we have absorbed those gifts. The great fish has absorbed those gifts, and we can begin to share them. Venus is a planet of sharing, and when we, you know, I'm going to go back just a tiny bit here. We can say something about a Libra, because it is a sign of sharing. We can say share and share alike. The idea that there must be justice, in other words, that love demands fairness and justice. So we understand that equality, having an equal share, equal opportunity, all of those are important under Libra, the Libra phase of the previous fourth general phase of the aspiring personality. So here we are describing, in general, the discipleship phase. Water of life am I, poured forth for thirsty men. Dedication to the soul is entirely in effect. The man is becoming soul-infused as the disciple, and he's beginning, really, no longer to carry the burden of the self. He's overcoming that and is carrying the burden of humanity. He's helping humanity. He's becoming a humanitarian, and many are the Aquarian people who understand what it means to become a humanitarian. They study humanity. They're interested in human nature, and because they know more about humanity, they can become the humanitarian. The disciple is realizing, this is in general, and not, this is for all the decanates, for the entire period, the disciple, realizing his increasing spiritual wealth, sets his sights on serving the whole. Or serving the whole, let me say, sets his sights upon serving the whole and serving all of humanity, certainly. Inclusiveness increases, as you would expect, under Jupiter, because it is the planet of expanding horizons and ever wider embrace. Barriers are removed. Remember that Saturn was the ruler, one of the rulers of the first decanate of Aquarius, and not only of the decanate, but Saturn was a ruler of Aquarius, so barriers are removed, the expansive powers of the soul are revealed, and there is great anticipation. Nothing of value seems impossible. All right, that's just a little bit said. Now let's talk about, we'll move here upward, let's talk about our friends Saturn, Mercury, and Venus again, only not this time in terms of the one who simply attempts to contact the soul now and then, a bit sporadically and not with any consistency, but of the true disciple, who is the initiative of the first degree, who is functioning according to the greater mantra. Let's see how Saturn and Mercury and Venus can work if you are at that stage of consciousness, the fifth stage of consciousness, and are born in one of these three areas. The disciple, this is the Saturn from 0 to 10 degrees, the disciple lives the disciplines of the soul for the benefit of the group. Saturn are the disciplines of the soul. He is definitely increasingly group conscious at this time, and he's realizing that his true identity is not as the self-centered ahamkaric individual, but really he is living and expanding through the group. He subjects himself to discipline, that's Saturn, so that he may strenuously help and serve in the carrying of the burden of humanity. Saturn is associated with lead. Lead is traditionally the heavy element, although there are other elements now more heavy, of course, but heavy as lead is a little aphorism, a little saying that we have, and that's the dead weight of, in this case, much of humanity, which the disciple has to help carry, the burden of humanity. He undertakes the heaviest of work to uplift humanity, so he's a great spiritual toiler in Aquarius. We sometimes don't realize how very much Aquarius can be dedicated to the ethic of work for others. We think of that only in relation to Capricorn, because some Aquarius people, you know, in the early days are really unstable and flaky and irresponsible, but later they really get a hold and they are the great burden carriers. He works with skill upon the fixed cross. Skill in action is related both to Saturn and to Mercury, gradually releasing himself and others from this type of crucifixion into greater freedom. So if we apply Piscus Austrinus, for instance, he, the disciple, with difficulty disciplines himself to absorb the energies of the New Age and to share them. You see, when you look at the great fish absorbing what Aquarius, the water carrier, is pouring forth, you realize that somehow these great gifts, the flow of energies, must become a part of the individual, part of the absorbent individual, so he can do something about it, so that he can express what he has absorbed. Now, you know, Cygnus the Swan, it's possible to consider Cygnus here as the soul, but increasingly as I think about this, there is a great freedom that is achieved in the third decanate, and somehow, as I ponder this, and even the order that these constellations are usually given, with Pisces Australis coming first, I see the necessity under Saturn to subject oneself to the absorption, and the great freedom and liberation coming more under Venus. When you think about Cygnus as the liberated soul and Venus as the liberated solar angel, they begin to make a lot of sense. So I could be, you know, revising some of the views that I've had here, and I would say, in this case, or the swan. Yes. That's possible. And here, instead of the swan, I might say, or Piscus australis. It's sometimes called Piscus australis, it's sometimes called Piscus austrinus or Pisces australis. It has various names, but it is the southern fish, the southern fish. Okay. You know, the first and third decanates can be somewhat interchangeable, just as the first and third rays can be. They have a strong relationship to each other, and it's only the ruler of the second decanate which seems to remain quite stable. All right, now, here we are. So that was the idea of the increasing responsibility under Saturn that the disciple feels. Now let's look at Mercury. We'll look at Pegasus. I think we can pretty well decide that Pegasus is much associated here with the middle decanate and with Gemini. The disciple enters the group mind. Okay, Aquarius is very good for the group mind and the group soul. And Mercury, of course, is one of those multiply mental planets, referring to all kinds of levels of mind. The disciple enters the group mind and the group soul, and his consciousness is expanded thereby, which fits with the Pegasus theme of rising up into the heavens. The actual myth is quite complicated, but in general, there is this whole theme of aviation and elevation. Under Pegasus, for the disciple, the rain cloud of noble things becomes accessible to him. And this is even greater for the initiate. You know, we realize what a fertile mind many Aquarian people manage to have, and how intuitive they are, and how much knowledge they seem to access from the higher worlds. The divine mind begins to enter the personal mind, and he is inspired by ideas. The whole idea of inspiration is very connected with Mercury and with Pegasus. So I think that describes quite well what will happen if you're born in the fifth general phase of discipleship response, soul living, and you are in the 10 to 20 decanate. Great ideas are coming in, and it's just a question of whether one will be able to really live those ideas. Now we move into the more love-wisdom phase, Venus representing in many respects love-wisdom, and we are a disciple, and we are as if in our own microcosmic phase of brotherhood. The disciple cultivates group harmony and group love. Aquarius, the sign of the group, and Venus, the planet of harmony and love, from 20 degrees to 30 degrees. He begins to live as a soul in service, motivated by deepening understanding of brotherly love. So there is a strong, not just study of one's fellow human beings. And I would say, you know, I would say here we can say under Mercury, he studies the character of the group members and seeks to enhance their gifts. This is the student of human nature. But here in the third decanate we have something more, not just the objectivity of Mercury, but the deepening love of Venus. And under Piscus Austrinus, the disciple offers himself sacrificially in service. If under Cygnus, he achieves increasing spiritual freedom and he liberates himself from the fixed cross. We always have to bear in mind that one day the solar angel will fly free. And this is at the fourth initiation. So Venus doesn't quite have the wings of Mercury, but Venus is a very elevated planet, and it does achieve its freedom. So that when a person is truly identified with Venus, they have achieved freedom from the three lower worlds, and with the return of the solar angels to the heart of the sun and the central spiritual sun, the man is truly liberated. He has absorbed sufficient of the curriculum of Venus into his nature to become liberated, truly liberated, into the fifth kingdom of nature, instead of simply being an aspirant to that fifth kingdom. At the first initiation, he enters the fifth kingdom, but in a lowly state. And finally, at the fourth initiation, achieves a great liberation, not just in consciousness, as at the third initiation, but in fact. In other words, magnetically, he no longer needs to return to the realm of the fourth kingdom of nature. So Cygnus, that great swan out of time and space, has, I think, a very strong association with the third decanate and Venus as well. See, we have to decide how we're going to operate here. First of all, we have to accept the idea that it is wise to assign a particular extra zodiacal constellation to a particular decanate. The decanate may indeed be akin to a particular constellation, but in a way, anyone who's born in the sign can relate to all three of these extra zodiacal constellations. Then, suppose we decide to assign extra zodiacal constellations each to a decanate, we have to decide whether we should end with the most spectacular of the constellations. In other words, Orion is the most spectacular of the Taurian constellation. Should we end with Orion and begin with Eridanus, or end with Eridanus, the river of souls, and begin with Orion? Usually, as we move in the 1-2-3 phase, we move from less to greater to greatest. So should the greatest of the extra zodiacal constellations be found in the third, in relation to the third decanate? If so, then Orion would relate to the third decanate of Taurus, and Cygnus, certainly the greatest of these constellations, would relate to the third decanate of Aquarius. And then there is the other issue of whether the manner in which we assign these decanates correlates with the best assignment of planets to the decanates. And sometimes we have apparent contradictions there. As Venus is definitely the ruler of the first decanate of Taurus, and Orion correlates with Venus much more than with Saturn, which is the ruler of the third decanate of Taurus. So in this case, I think that we have Cygnus correlating particularly with Venus more so than with Saturn, the beauty of the soul. And when you think of the swan, it's a very Venusian bird. It's a bird that conjures up the image of great love and faith, conjures up the image of the more beautiful aspect of ourself, which is the soul. And we know that swans mate for life, so there's a great sense of loyalty there, and of a true soul union, soul mateship, and so forth. So Cygnus, I think, goes very well with Venus. But, you know, we're in a speculative area here, and much experience with actual disciples and initiates will be required before we can ascertain these associations and see if they are truly and exclusively legitimate. When I think of myself, let's say, as an Aries individual, and I look at Cetus the sea monster, and Cassiopeia the enthroned queen, and Perseus the hero, I think I can relate to all of those just by the fact of being a strongly Aries individual. But my son is in the second decanate, it's in the Leo decanate, which relates more to the enthroned queen. So I have to ponder, do I somehow relate more to the meaning of Cassiopeia than I do to either Cetus or Perseus, and each one of us would have to subject our psyche to that kind of questioning to see whether the reasoned assignments that we have of the extra zodiacal constellations to the different decanates really make sense in terms of our own life, our own life. Okay, now we are ready to study stage 6. One day I'll get this chart so that it's all lined up, but every time I add something, things move up and down, so they don't stay in perfect alignment. Okay, we are in the initiatic phase here. Whoops, we were in the initiatic phase. There we are. The initiatic triadal monadic phase. And that is phase number 6. Remember, there are 6 decanates, and one way of thinking about them, if one doesn't think too rigidly, is as we start to move clockwise, we have the physical, then the second decanate clockwise is the emotional, third decanate is the mental, mental personal. And then as we start to move counterclockwise, the 6th decanate is personal aspirational, the 5th is disciplic soul, and the 3rd is the 6th, or 3rd in the counterclockwise, is initiatic, triadic, monadic. But as I say, don't get too literal about that, because I'm sure that we can find soul-oriented people, soul-focused people born in every decanate. We can find aspirational people born in every decanate. And we can find, although they are rarer, initiatic, triadal, monadic individuals born in every decanate. I feel convinced about that. And thus it would be for, you know, the physical Lemurian types, the Atlantean types. My goodness, the Atlantean types are so prominent. They will be born in all decanates, of course. And the early Aryan types, which are beginning to develop mental focus, I would say, in all decanates. But this remains, of course, to be proven, and it will take us some centuries to do that. So now I'm just going to speak of the initiatic triadal monadic phase in general. In terms of rulerships, such an initiate is working under the 3 planets veiled by the moon, which is the hierarchical ruler, but is still expressing the higher qualities, I would say, of Jupiter. Jupiter is such an amazing second ray planet, and so important in this solar system, so related to the sun, and so related, therefore, to Leo, and then Leo being related to Aquarius. Jupiter has a very strong influence in the developed Aquarian. So I would, for the initiate of the 3rd degree, I would continue to extend the rulership of Jupiter into that higher, more spiritual Aquarian response. From page 333, he is the server of humanity, of course, but he's the server of all men, and he's carrying increasingly with the hierarchy, who serves the planetary logos, the burden of the world. The burden of the world is really carried by the planetary logos, and the hierarchy is helping the planetary logos carry this great burden. And Aquarian individuals, we know, are prominent at the 3rd degree and even at the 4th degree. So here we have the transfigured initiate of the 3rd degree. He can express the powers of the 3 sacred planets veiled by the moon, Vulcan, Neptune, and Uranus, through his 3 personality vehicles. Uranus through the mind, Neptune through the astral body, Vulcan through the etheric physical body. I think there's so much more that could be said, but I was just quickly summarizing these ideas. This is the transfigured initiate, really a world server, a liberated world server, liberated in one respect at the 3rd initiation, and free to join the hierarchy in the carrying of its burdens. Of course, you know, we don't transcend all the planets. We don't just move beyond them. We incorporate them. Saturn, for great responsibility, Uranus for tremendous understanding. The occult mind is at work, and ingenious methods, innovative methods, are being used at all the time, all the time, to help with hierarchical work. The great sense of group consciousness under Jupiter, including all people under Jupiter, including the entire world, Jupiter and Aquarius, and then, of course, the transfigured personality vehicles empowered from triadal realms. Every one of the vehicles greatly elevated in its strength and vibratory capacity, showing forth the light of Vulcan and the sensitivity of Neptune and the great originality and electric power and electric fire under Uranus. We have to include all the planets in the hierarchical phase. It's not like we just leave the earlier ones entirely behind and only move into the province of the highest planets. DK explained this very much under Aquarius, this idea of inclusion, of not simply moving beyond, but including that which has been before. So now, I just have a few things to say here. We will look at, for the initiate phase, Saturn, Mercury, and Venus. So here we are in the initiatic phase from 0 to 10 degrees. The initiate subjects himself to difficulties, Saturn, choosing to enter into crisis, choosing to deal with planetary karma, difficulties, Saturn. I'm going to put in here a little bit of what I call, planetary karma. Taking on great burdens as the world's server, Piscus Austrinus. He has absorbed all this, he has drunk from the river of life, and he can now save and help with all that he has absorbed. He demonstrates his increasing freedom. There's Cygnus from the fixed cross. I see that when I prepared this document, I realized this sort of contradiction between Cygnus and Piscus Australis, and wanted to see how each of them would apply in the first and third decanates. So let's just say it's the burden. Let's just say subject to the divine plan, and responsibly serving that plan no matter what. This is all under Saturn, and we have an atmic association with Saturn as Atma. So let's just say much spiritual will here applied in the execution of responsibility. There are many things that could be said. You could write a little chapter on each one of these phases, but I think the important thing is that for any of us who is in a particular decanate to understand the potentials of that decanate, its associated constellations and its ruler, and to see how we can fulfill those potentials in our life, how we can use those energies to fulfill the life purpose of this incarnation. We move on to Mercury. The initiate is coming under Pegasus. He travels into the rain cloud of noble things. He's not just receiving a little bit, and brings inventions and illumination to humanity. This is a Gemini here, the Gemini decanate. You know, Aquarius is associated with the burdens, particularly. Aquarius is in a way the most substantial of all of these air signs. It's associated as well with the universal mind. So, Gemini is entering the rain cloud of noble things, and maybe even sensing the rain cloud of unknown things. I think he calls it something like that. Sensing, not sending. And let's just say living in the world of ideas, and able to representing the cosmic ethers. Ethers. Let's just say Pegasus travels in the cosmic ethers. So increasingly triadally focused. Triadally. Okay. Now, finally, we move to Venus for the initiate. And this is kind of an analogy to what will happen at the end of the age of Aquarius, when true brotherly love supervenes after much struggle in the first decanate, much illumination in the second. Brotherly love and the right application of all that has been learned in love will be expressed. So the initiate expresses group soul. He's identified with group soul, group love, and universal brotherhood under Venus, an important hierarchical quality, a true member of the spiritual hierarchy, a true member of the spiritual hierarchy, and the initiate is a fullest expression of the solar angel in the group and still wider context, and all under the inspiration of love, wisdom. So this, and even the monad is brought in. Oh, because the monad is the true home of a brotherhood. It's on that monadic level that we truly realize ourselves as brothers. And and not only brothers, but brothers in a state of equality. Because as spirits, we are all equal. And this points to Libra, the sub-ruler of the third Aquarian decanate. All right, so that gives us an idea. These are just, I think, indications. Dane Rudar used to say that astrology was the algebra of life, and we have to apply these generalities to our own specific situation. So when we continue, we will end this esoteric astrology number 65. We are still on page what? Still on page, I suppose, still on page 150. We are. We've done most of the work in other tabulations. And we will continue with his transitional discussion here, having taken care of a good deal of the Aquarian study. This is 1 hour and 1 hour and 15 minute tape, and it can be used in the 15 minute segments. So we will now, having finished most of Aquarius, but not the entire chapter, we will work close with the great invocation. And then move on to number 66. Okay. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. from the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we have reached the point, and we will continue with Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 66, moving towards the completion of the Aquarius chapter. We've just finished working with the decanates. Until then.